The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody. This is BL Allison, and I've got Eva Smith with me here, and also Joe as our kind backup person. Let me see what happens when I make this big so you can see it. I can see it just fine on my other screen, but, oh, wait a minute. That isn't what you want. You want me to do that. There. Is that better, Eva?
No. There we go. Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, that isn't what you were supposed to say. Okay. Today I'm going to talk to you about our fivefold vehicles. Remember last time we talked about the seven rays? Well, now we're going to put them in action in our fivefold vehicles. And after I spend 5 minutes on that, I'm going to go into the environment of the natal chart. No, seriously, I'll take a little more than 5 minutes. But like before, what I'm going to do is move a little quickly through some of this. I'm going to give it, you know, you'll have the slides to go back over. And I want you to take the time to look at the slides with the different vehicles on them. So that's one of the reasons I'm going through it a little bit fast today. All right. So first thing I have to tell you, and I know we've told you this before, and we will tell you again, we cannot tell what our rays are just from looking at our astrological chart. We have to try and determine what our rays are first. And we do that. We try and intuit. We try and, you know, look at the traits that they give us for the rays. And then once we have that hypothesis, then we can look at the planets and the signs in our chart and see how they might be supporting our hypothesis. And that should hopefully give us a little greater insight into how we are expressing those vehicles via those planets and that and the signs. So finding the rays of our fivefold vehicle, it's an art. It takes many years to refine it as best we can. And sometimes we just need to change it. Work with it. Try certain rays out. Observe our behavior and see if that seems to fit us. Adjust it occasionally, or in my case, have someone adjust it for you. You know, I had several people say, oh, no. You are a ray six personality, girl, if I have ever seen one. So anyway, we change. We also have that hard thing where we have to try and determine, we know we have a ray four somewhere. We know we might have a ray one somewhere. Is it a ray four personality that's working through a ray one mind? Or is it maybe a ray four mind that's working through a ray one personality? You know, sometimes it can be really hard to differentiate the way that goes. So keep that in mind as we go through this. I'm talking about the five-fold vehicles that most of us are working with. I've grayed out the monadic ray here because that's usually beyond discovery until after the third initiation has been taken. So most of us are not really working with that. All right, so we're talking about the soul ray, which is the source of love, wisdom within us, the personality ray. That is going to appear late when our mind, emotions, and physical have integrated into that dominant, intelligent personality. Our mental ray, how we think, our emotional ray, how we express our emotions and desires, and our physical ray, our body type, our daily habits and routines. Those are the fivefold vehicles that we're going to be talking about today. So observe what we know about the rays. Observe it in nature, in the world, in other people. See if we can identify our own rays by observing how we express on each level. One recommendation that we have, these are notes from Leonie Hodgson, and I always thought these were excellent notes. So start from the outside and then work in. So start with the physical etheric. You know, it's usually going to be ray three or ray seven. So What's your body type like? How do you move? What are your daily routines and habits? Then look at the emotional ray. It's usually going to be ray 2 or 6. How do you express your emotions? The mental rays, 1, 4, or 5. How do you think, plan, analyze, and communicate your thoughts? The personality ray can be any of those 7. That's how you assert yourself and how you try to control others. Your soul ray can be any of the 7. This is going to be more selfless work that you love doing for people. It's a higher calling. So the great benefit of analyzing your personal rays is it trains the mind to detach from automatic identification with your personality and become that observer. The more you can do this, the more you can identify with your spiritual nature and identify that spiritual nature in other people around you. So, what are our rays? Well, we actually usually start out on the rays of attribute. Our personality rays change with each lifetime. Sometimes we might be on it for several lifetimes. Our soul ray is going to remain constant over many lifetimes. But as we grow and evolve, we are eventually going to raise it from one of those rays of attribute to a ray of aspect. It's the combination of the rays of our personality and soul that make each of us unique. They actually qualify us to perform different functions, and it's what we decided that we needed for our soul's purpose when we came into incarnation. So it predisposes us to certain methods of operation. For some of us, mental activities are easier to follow, and for others, spiritual devotion is a better method for them to work with. The personality is going to try and control others and direct activity according to its energy type. Remember, we talked about the energy lines last time. Rays 1 and 7, control through will and power. Rays 2, 4, and 6, they're magnetic and they express emotional power. And 3 and 5, through the power of the mind. If the soul is not yet in control, this personality is going to be working for selfish and materialistic purposes. If the soul is in control, then it's going to be powerful for a greater good. So here are the groupings again that we talked about last time. The hard willpower line, Ray 1 willpower and 7 ceremony and order. These leaders assert authority through raw power, ruthlessness, superb organizing skills for 7, and social skills. The soft emotional line, Ray 2, they're attractive. Ray 4, they do it through drama, through fighting, through war. And Ray 6, they do it through being devotional and preaching sometimes very narrow ideals. Personality for the mind and the intelligence line, they're thinkers who assert superiority by brilliant and clever manipulation for Ray 3 and using the facts to gain advantage and to be right for Ray 5. There are other things to consider when we talk about personalities, when we talk about all 5 of these vehicles. What I'm using here are, it's a short synopsis that really kind of gets to the point. If you want to delve further into it, of course, Tapestry of the Gods by Michael Robbins, 2 volumes that cover like hundreds of pages for each vehicle. You can go into that. But I've found that this nitty-gritty here that Leone distilled it down to is really helpful in trying to narrow it down to realistic possibilities for us, okay? So the Ray 1 and 7 personalities, that's the hard power egos prior to soul influence. They're proud, independent. They're enforcers. They achieve success through aggressive bullying behavior for Ray 1. and rigid, exacting standards for Ray 7. The major difference between these two, Ray 1 is loud, aggressive, they're isolationists, and they don't care what others think because they know they're right. Ray 7, on the other hand, they're courteous, they like people, and they're preoccupied with appearances. 2-4-6 personalities. These are the feeling, emotional people prior to soul influence. They can be intuitive, instinctual, and they're people people. Ray 2 achieves success through emotional manipulation. Ray 4 through battle and drama, and Ray 6 through terrorism and threats. The major difference in these three lines, Ray 2 is all-inclusive. They always include everyone. Ray 4, they're going to oscillate between including and hating. And Ray 6 is going to reject anybody who's different. Ray 3 and 5 personalities prior to soul influence. They think their way forward. They achieve success, Ray 3, by outthinking and outmanipulating. Ray 5, by listing the facts and proving their case. Major difference, Ray 3, they're mentally versatile. They're expansive, they're philosophical, and they're fast thinkers. Ray 5, they have a very narrow field of focus. They're technical, they're slow and deliberate thinkers. Okay, before I move on, are there any questions about the personality? Hold on a second here. Terry, you've got your hand up. Did you have a question about any of the slides so far?
Well, I didn't have my hand up, actually, but never mind.
Okay,
good. No, I think I'm all right at the moment.
Okay, all right. Then I'll move on to the soul. All right, the soul again can be any of the seven. And when it emerges, it gives you that deep yearning to find your specific area of service. Again, for many lifetimes, we work with the rays of attribute as a soul, 4 through 7. But once the soul gains that measure of control, then it's possible that we're going to transfer to one of the rays of aspects. So the rays 3, 5, and 7 are going to transfer eventually to ray 1. Ray 4 and 6 are going to transfer eventually to ray 2. And DK tells us that a cycle of lives on that third ray is always going to precede this transference. Because remember that those four rays of attribute are a subset, really, of ray 3. So, you know, we have to go through that too. They have so many different relationships, but keep this information in mind. Okay, 1 in 7 souls. This is a spiritual will and power. They inspire the heart, Ray 1, to become the one and only, and Ray 7 to achieve perfection in form. Ray 1 instills a yearning to become a leader who is powerful and yet benevolent. Ray 7, it's a yearning to become a leader who is highly organized and efficient. Ray 1 helps people by freeing them from oppression, and Ray 7 by bringing divine order to their lives. Ray 2 inspires the heart to love everyone. Ray 4 to create and live in beauty and harmony. And Ray 6 to express the highest ideals. Ray 2 instills a yearning to become a healer or a teacher. Ray 4 to become a counselor, a mediator, or an artist. And Ray 6 to become a religious worker or care professional. Ray 2 helps people by comforting the suffering and helping them move forward through wise counsel. Ray 4 by resolving conflict and beautifying their life. And Ray 6 helps people by inspiring others to follow their highest ideals. Ray 3 inspires the heart to manifest God's plan. Ray 5 inspires the heart to know the truth and reveal life's mysteries. Ray 3 instills a yearning to become a teacher, a philosopher, a philanthropist. Ray 5 instills that yearning to become the scientist, a researcher, or a worker with technology. Ray 3 helps people by stimulating their mental creativity. Ray 5 by discovering new truths, scientific breakthroughs, or technology that will assist humanity. Let me stop there. Okay, any questions on that? See, it's not a lot of information there, but I think it clearly identifies for you where you stand and what it is that, you know, how to tell the difference between if you're waffling between, well, is it this one or is it that one? I think those are good examples of how to do that. All right, the mental ray. This is how the person thinks, processes information, and communicates. It can be either Ray 1, which is going to be an occult mind, a firm and a stubborn mind. Ray 4, that's an intuitive mind, creative, artistic, can be indecisive. Or Ray 5, that's scientific mind, interprets things very literally, and they're firmly entrenched in the facts. Just ask me, I know. Ray 1 mental. They move fast in that straight line, go straight to the point, and they jump to conclusions. They're hard-edged, they have sharp thoughts, they deal with a larger picture, they can have brief, clipped speech, straight to the point here. They have excellent organizing and a prioritizing mind. They can be assertive, and yes, they can in fact be aggressive. As you can see from these pictures here. See, Eva? I got pictures. Ray 4 mental. They oscillate, weighing each thought. They actually can learn by osmosis. Boy, I wished I could do that. They literally absorb information. Thoughts can be exaggerated and very dramatic. They can fudge details for that dramatic effect they're asking for, they're looking for. They've got colorful ideas and speech, and they use a lot of humor. They are not well ordered in their processes in their mind, and they can be easily overwhelmed when they're in an emotional state. Ray 5, careful and deliberate mind. They assemble all the facts and weigh them carefully. Highly accurate, thrive on those little details. They explain facts in a verbal monotone. They're very orderly, logical, sequential mind, hypercritical, non-emotional mind. What more can I say? A picture is worth a thousand words. The astral ray. Look at our emotions, how we express them, especially when we're upset. It's either going to be 2 or 6. Ray 2, they're sensitive, they're fearful, they're calmer and more quiet than Ray 6. They can easily be overwhelmed by circumstances, and they curl in if attacked or hurt emotionally. Ray 6, they're an emotional, they're intense, they're fiery, they're very active or reactive. They lack emotional control under stress, and boy, they can retaliate if they get attacked or dumped. Ray 2 can be a selfish personal love. It tries to bind others through manipulation by playing the victim. It can be a selfish kind of what they think of as unselfishness. When they want something, they're actually more accepting to leave things as they are, and they are willing to share. The higher expression of a Ray 2 astral is inclusive and accepting. Ray Ray 6, it's a selfish personal love, burning desire and passion to possess that loved one. They want all or nothing. When they want something, they feel intense jealousy, they're very envious, and they'll try and take the cherished object. There is, of course, a higher expression, and that's inclusive and inspirational. Any questions? Nope, I don't see any so far. Okay, physical etheric body. That's, again, two choices there, Ray 3 or Ray 7. Body type. It's Ray 3, strong, muscular, physical resilience. Ray 7 is more refined, graceful, finely boned. Brain activity, because remember, the brain is in the physical body. Ray 3, rapid brain activity. Many thoughts emerge, but not necessarily well coordinated. Ray 7, brain activity. They organize their thoughts before speaking, more measured speech. I love these two slides. Ray 3, physical. Pigpen. They have endurance. They have strength for sports. They're active. They're busybody. They're restless. They dislike long periods of inactivity. They can easily manipulate their physical environment. They're not especially sensitive to pain. They're physically very casual. Very casual, inattentive to physical order and detail. They can live in a mess, noise, clutter, and they resist physical disciplines or restrictions. Look like anybody you know? And then here's the Ray 7. Strong but graceful. They're better at sports like gymnastic or dance. This is what their closets look like. They're happy with quietness and stillness, and they love a serene environment. They're sensitive to pain. They're physically formal. They're attentive to physical order, cannot handle clutter and mess. And they're excellent ritualists. They love that established routine. Okay. There's very subtle distinctions when we're looking at this. We may have the Ray figured out, but we need to figure out what vehicle is most appropriate for it, okay? What vehicle we primarily work from. Usually, we're going to be focused in our astral or our mental. Odd and even number rays have a similar vibration, and they usually tend to stick together. Ray 2, 4, or 6 soul, it's not yet in full expression, might be focusing through that astral ray. A Ray 2 soul may seem more like a Ray 6 if that is your astral ray and it's focused there. Or a serene Ray 2 astral may quietly express a Ray 6 soul. Ray 1, 3, 5, or 7 personality, while strong, could be focusing through the mental or the physical ray. So while you might figure out that you've got that 3 or 5 somewhere, it might be hard to tell on which of the vehicles they are. As I said earlier, many people, they adjust their hypothesis over the years, trying on the new combinations to see how they fit. As I told you earlier, we can't tell what our rays are just from looking at our astrological chart. We have to come up with a working hypothesis first. Can you guys hear? We've got a weather warning going off. I'm sorry if you can hear that. Anyway, we come up with a hypothesis, as I've done here with my own. Ray 2 soul, Ray 6 personality. I think I've got a Ray 5 mental, Ray 2 astral, and maybe a Ray 3 physical, maybe a Ray 7. I'm not, the jury's out on that. My closet isn't as nice as the one, but nowhere near as bad as the other. Okay. Anyway, now that I've got my hypothesis, then and only then can I look at the energies in my own chart to see how that might be support this. Now, we're not going to do that quite yet. Both Eva and I are going to do that a little later on, but we want to describe a few more things to you first. But we are eventually going to get to it, and then we're going to ask you to do the same thing. So I just wanted you to know that we come up with a hypothesis first, and then we go to the chart. And you guys are all going to be given an opportunity to do that a little later on. Okay? So I'm ready to move on to the environment now, unless we have any questions before I move on. As I said, short and sweet on the vehicles, you will get the slides. And then I hope that you will go back and work on this, and where you haven't determined which of your rays are yet, you will look at this. If you've already determined it, then I hope that you will revisit it and reconfirm. Okay. Terry, I see your hand up again. Do you have a comment?
Yes. I was wondering about changing rays. I realize you might want to deal with this later, but how far is it possible to change rays during any one lifetime?
DK actually talks about that. He talks to several of the Dyna disciples about the fact that they're transferring from one ray to another. Remember, I mentioned that we usually start out our personality and our soul on the rays of attribute, and then later we transfer to the rays of aspect. Well, we do that. You know, of course, we change the personality ray from lifetime to lifetime. And sometimes we may think we have a personality ray when really it's a legacy ray that we've carried with us for a while. And in this life, we're supposed to be working on a new one. I mean, DK actually talks about things like, okay, you've got a ray six soul and and you're transferring to ray two soul, and you do that through the sub rays. You know, one lifetime or two lifetimes, you'll have the ray six with the sub of a two, and then you'll switch, and it'll be a ray two with the sub of a six as you're transitioning through that process. So it does happen. I don't think it happens all that frequently, and so it would be a momentous life when it was happening. But yes, he did discuss that with his disciples. Is that your question? Okay. And Eva, did you have Eva any here. Comments that you wanted to make concerning that?
Yeah, no, Terry. Terry, hi, Eva here.
People do think about themselves changing quite often. And I think they probably think far too much about thinking about changing. It's probably much less so, as you suggested. It's just seeing other aspects of the race you've got, the race you've got.
Yeah, I think it's because
I think
it's because they've misunderstood their rays and they just haven't got the right hypothesis. But okay, go ahead, please, Eva.
Sorry about that. Hi, Terry. Eva here. I have to agree with everything that's been said so far, but let's remember that this is the soul's agenda. It's not the personality's agenda. The personality just kind of picks up hints here and there and should really just be living its life to the best that it can. It's the soul's agenda whether or not a particular lifetime requires a transference from a ray of attribute to a ray of aspect. I don't think we can will it, nor can we want it, because we would prefer a different ray. But I think very much like what BL has said, many times we actually evolve within the ray. So for example, a reactive person with a sixth ray astral might find themselves a lot less reactive and much more calm and more sensitive to their fellow beings and to their environment. It does not necessarily mean that one has changed that particular ray from a six to a two. What it means is one is evolving and therefore can handle their astrality a lot better. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. That's really all I wanted to say.
Good.
Thank you, BL.
Yeah, thank you for making that point, Eva. You know, everything has both the lower quality and the higher quality, and we hope that we're learning to use the higher qualities of these rays somewhere along the line. Okay, we're going to talk about the environment next. Hey, that's me, my Ray 5 mind, more dry stuff to throw at you. But I want you all to keep in mind that these are the building blocks that we all need to know to get to learn as much as we can about ourselves. The environment in our natal charts can tell us about the lessons of life that we're working on. The chart in these little graphs and tables, you've seen these. Most astrologers will give you something that has these in it, right? Well, we're going to talk about all of these things here, okay? These are the quadrants. These two are the hemispheres, the modes, the elements. I'm going to be talking about all of those. That's all part of our environment. Okay. It's just exactly the opposite of if you were looking at a map. And I was told once the ancients set it up that way because they would use it to look up at the night sky. And so that was the perspective they were looking at. Anyway, the north is this part of it. The south is this part of it. The north is the dark, the night. The south is the light, the day. East is over here on the first house cusp, and west is over here. East is the sun rising over that ascendant to the light of day and bringing it down and setting in the west. So the chart, the rising, at any rate, moves this way, okay? We're always going to feel, I mean, you know, DK talks about the environment, he talks about the planetary influences, and when we get under control of the esoteric stuff, it's more about the signs and the rays. But it never negates the environment completely. It never negates the mundane completely, okay? So whether we're talking about personality or soul expression, whether we're talking about exoteric or esoteric, we're going to feel those lower levels as well as any of the higher levels that we're able to tap into. Most of us still work with personality level environments. The houses, like everything else, have both a lower and a higher spiritual purpose and characteristic. And, you know, that's going to play in even when we start feeling the influence of the soul. Because remember that we always manifest our esoteric work in the outer world with the form within whatever environment it is that we work in. Okay. Planets in different hemispheres, they show us our tendency. You can see here the southern hemisphere, the northern hemisphere, the eastern hemisphere, the western hemisphere. Northern hemisphere, they're introverts. They recharge primarily via quiet interludes down here. Southern, oops, up here. They're extroverts. They recharge primarily via contact with other people. Eastern, self-initiated activities, whether it's alone or in a group. Western, I lost my mouse over here. Group affiliation, following group-initiated activities. So where our planets might be clustered, you know, it will give us these characteristics. The quadrants. First quadrant, house 1 to 3. It's our personal identity and our self-development. The second quadrant, house 4 to 6, it's our personal expression, family relations, our inner security. The third quadrant, 7 to 9, it's our social identity, world issues. The fourth quadrant, 10 to 12, it's our social expression and our contribution to public service. All of those things, keep that in the back of your mind when you're looking at your chart. the elements are our sensory expressions. They actually give us some of our most interesting characteristics. We, of course, have all signs to some degree, but most of us are going to find that we have an uneven proportion of the elements, and that's going to color our personal characteristics. Are we enthusiastic, sensual, intellectual, or maybe sensitive? You can see here, earth, dependable, grounded, reliable, materialistic, loyal, practical, water, refreshing, charming, mysterious, private, sensitive, emotional, air, powerful, creative, fun, adventurous, exciting, and fire, strong emotion, enthusiastic, passionate, temperamental. Elements are classified into two main groups. There's the fire and air triplicity. They're masculine. They're the odd number signs. They're active. They're self-expressive. It's the yang energy. The earth and water triplicity, that's feminine. They're the even number signs. They're passive. They're receptive. They're the yin energy. So fire and air has an affinity for each other. The earth and water has an affinity for each other. Cross them, not so much. Earth relies on the senses and practical reason, that innate understanding as to how the material world functions. They're patient, they're self-disciplined, they're resourceful, matter-of-fact, conventional, cautious, can be rigid, adhere to routines, can have a linear approach. Water, they're in touch with their feelings. They're very sensitive. They're in tune with nuances and subtleties. They're intuitive, empathic responses to others. They're in tune with a deeper dimension of life. They can be vulnerable, reactive, fearful. They seek closeness in emerging. Fire, excitable, enthusiastic. They can lack self-control, can be self-centered, impersonal, impatient, rushing into things, can seem insensitive. They can come across as willful. Air, it's focused energy that's on ideas, may not have materialized yet. They can be these impractical dreamers. They have the ability to detach. And so they're often objective and they have a good perspective. It's the most social of all the elements. They can overvalue intellectual ability. And they need distance and objectivity in order to find themselves. We've looked at most of these already. Fire signs, they represent the day because they're masculine and they're compatible with the air signs. I just wanted you to have the different tables. Sometimes people like one table better than another. So the negative traits of the fire signs are listed here. The positive traits are listed here. I'm not going to go through all of them. Earth, practical, stable, compatible with the water signs, like we said. Here's the table again with the negative and positive traits. I think it's always good to look at these, the characteristics that they share. Air signs, compatible with the fire signs. Good communication. Negative and positive traits for the air signs. I just love those tables. That's what I like, is all the little, oh, yep, I have my ascendant in Gemini, so no, I don't think I'm this or this. I can probably say that. Maybe I'm working on this and this and no, not so versatile. You know, and it gives me an idea of where I stand and what I need to work with, which is why I put those in there. Okay, water, emotional, nurturing, comforting, compatible with the earth signs. All these were in the other slides. and the water traits. This one's one of my favorite ones too, because that's my husband's sun sign. Secretive, controlling, determined. He thinks he's intuitive. I know what you're thinking. Okay, so any question on the elements before I move on to the modes? Nope. Okay. So we had the four elements, and now we have the three different kinds of modes. These are actually modes of operation. They're the physical qualities of the signs, whether we're changeable, determined, or initiating. We operate primarily in one mode, dependent on the astrological energies of our signs and planets and the rays within our chart. But what I want to do is I want to tell you that they should not be confused with the three crosses of initiation that describe our level of consciousness. One is actually the way that we tend to act, and the other is a description of our evolutionary standing. An overabundance of one or more of these modes in our chart is not going to indicate a particular level of consciousness. That can just not be determined from the chart. Okay. The cardinal cross. Aries, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn. Action, birth, beginning, outgoing, independent. They seek control over their environment. They're driven by a sense of purpose. There are movers and shakers. Exoterically, they're forceful, initiating, important. Will, drive, ambition. And while they're initiating, they may actually lack follow-through. May start all kinds of things, but will they complete it is the question. Esoterically, it develops directed, soul-controlled activity. Aries is the will to do, to create, establishing mental control. Cancer is developing intuition and soul sensitivity, and Libra is developing balance through mental control, Capricorn developing spiritual awareness, leading eventually to initiation. The fixed cross, desire, stability, steadfastness, having, holding, giving, growing, they tend towards caution, or a conservative approach, predictability is important to them. The signs Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, Aquarius. Exoterically, they're steadfast, stubborn, determined. They can actually make them very inflexible. Esoterically, the activity involves soul development. Taurus is developing the soul light. Leo is developing self-mastery. Scorpio is resolving conflict and duality and overcoming desire and illusion. And Aquarius is developing group awareness and world service. The mutable cross, Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces. They're adaptable, flexible, changeable. They're busy. They keep life interesting. They adapt to the environment readily. They adjust their environment to them. They're versatile and they're spontaneous. So see, there are three completely different ways of acting and presenting your activity. Exoterically, they're adaptable, they're versatile. One drawback is that they can actually be too inconsistent. Esoterically, the form life is developed through incarnation. Gemini is developing control of the opposites. Virgo is nurturing the soul and the heart. Sagittarius is developing that one-pointed aspiration. And Pisces is developing soul conscious. So, I've talked about the modes and the elements. I've talked about the male and female. And we can see that there's actually a pattern. The male, the female alternate. So there's six of each. There's three of the modes, and they alternate, starting with cardinal, fixed, mutable, cardinal, fixed, mutable, cardinal, fixed, mutable. And then there's the four elements, starting with fire, earth, air, water, fire, earth, air, water. And when we put them together in this way, that's where you get the 12 signs that have individual characteristics, because only one is going to be that fire fixed, and only one is going to be that cardinal air, and only one is going to be that mutable water. So this is the pattern that repeats itself through the triplicities of the elements and the quaternaries of the modes. All right, so do we have any comments before we move on? Nope, I don't see any. Okay. I want to talk about the angles of the chart. The ascendant, which is the first house cusp, and it's opposite the descendant, which is the seventh house cusp. The exoteric issue is balancing the self with the significant other, okay? The exoteric purpose is to integrate that personality and soul. So you want to look at what sign both of them are in. How is that axis working in your chart? The midheaven is the 10th house cusp, opposite the nadir, which is the 4th house cusp. Esoteric issue between them is career and home life. The esoteric purpose is to use those sacred foundations for our spiritual responsibilities. So again, what signs are they in? How is that axis working within your chart? Because these are important angles within our chart. Okay? The nadir, what we call the IC, I always get in trouble for saying this wrong. The Imam Chaley or something like that. IC. We'll call it the IC and the MC. Right here. The bottom of the chart, the top of the chart. The ascendant at the east, the descendant at the west. These are the four angles of your chart. Now, we had a bunch of options in creating the chart. We're using the things that we use for a very good reason. We use a geocentric orientation, which basically means the Earth is at the center and that the Sun is the one that's passing through the zodiac each month. In reality, we know that that's the opposite. But one of the things we do to offset this illusion is that we look at the sun-earth axis within the chart, okay? Wherever the sun is, the earth is going to be exactly the opposite, all right? This orientation, this geocentric orientation, was set up a long time ago when astrology was created, and it is, you know, the thought form of it that has perpetuated through the years, and it works in its way. We use the tropical zodiac. What that means is that zero Aries is always going to be the spring equinox in the northern hemisphere. Like the geocentric orientation, this is an archetype that's been built up over millennia. It's been around forever. It's similar to the distinction between the signs and the constellations that we have. One is the physical location in the sky, and the other is that archetype that we've built up. What actually happens is it takes more than 365 days for the sun to move around, or for us to perceive that the sun moves around. And so there's a little tiny wiggle room, and they call it the precession of the equinoxes. So the spring equinox actually slips backwards. But we artificially say, nope, zero Aries is always going to be the spring equinox, and that's when we're using the tropical zodiac. It's the difference between the sidereal and the tropical. The sidereal is more accurate based on the position of the stars in the sky, but it's not the archetype that has been created. Right now, as we get ready to enter the age of Aquarius, they are almost 30 degrees apart, which means if any of you have a chart done that's not done tropical, it's done sidereal, like a lot of the Vedic charts are your sun sign is going to be almost 30 degrees earlier. Mine, instead of being in Leo, would be in Cancer. That's the difference between the two of them. But again, it's this archetype that's been built up, and this is what DK urges us to use. So we're also going to be using, when we start delineating the charts, the Regiomontanus house system. House systems can actually vary. It's the choice of the astrologer as to which is best, and there's reasons for the various different ones that have been set up. But the angles are always going to remain the same no matter what the house system is. So that ascendant, descendant, ICMC is always going to be the same. It's just going to be the inner houses where the cusp might change slightly. But as astrologers, we always look at planets that are on the cusp of any house, and we look at how they work in both houses, actually. We do that for several reasons. The first being that the house of the cusp, there's no clear demarcation there. You know, the energy passes between the two. The other thing is, as we grow, as we evolve, our planets progress, and they're all going to move into the next house anyway. So there's reasons for all of this that we do. I'm just telling you right now, we're using geocentric tropical in the Regiomontanus house system. Okay, let's look at the overall implications here, all right? What is our environment? What does it look like? What are our houses, the quadrants, the hemispheres? Where are the planets focused? What elements are there the most of? Can you relate to expressing those characteristics of the elements? What elements might be lacking? What is your primary mode of operation? Are you changeable, initiatory, or stubborn? And what do those things tell you about yourself? Do you agree or disagree with the counts when you look at them? And if not, why not? Those are the things we're going to be looking at when we look at the environment of the house, when we actually start delineating the charts. Okay, let's look at the 12 houses now in a little bit more detail. The circle is, of course, divided into 12. All right, each sign is 30 degrees. The circle is 360 total. Using any of the house systems, the numbers of degrees may vary, so they are not all going to be equal sizes depending on which house system we use. Okay, you'll find that some houses are a little wider and some are a little skinnier, and that's one of the reasons that there are different house systems, is because some of the newer house systems try and account for and remove some of the distortion of some of the house systems, especially in the northern latitudes, where I saw one person, he had two signs intercepted because he had a whole bunch of skinny little tiny houses and then one huge big house. Okay, anyway, traditional houses. All right, these are the purpose of the houses. But first, before we get into that, I want to reiterate, the time of the birth is so very important, the exact time of birth, because that's what appears on the ascendant. In a 24-hour period, every sign hits this ascendant. So an ascendant is here for approximately 2 hours. But if you're in the later degrees of one or the earlier degrees of another and you don't know precisely, you could actually have what you think of as the wrong ascendant because it wasn't specific enough. All right. Same with the other two angles, the IC and the MC. It's so important. This is our personal mandala. That ascendant is our soul purpose. And so that is so important to us and the houses and everything that we have going on. Okay, first house, traditional exoteric astrology. It's our appearance, our temperament, our identity. Second house, possessions, resources, value. The third house, it's relatives, it's siblings, it's our communication, it's our primary education. The fourth house at the IC, that's our mother, our parents, our home. The fifth house, it's our hobbies, amusements, our children, our lovers. The sixth house, it's work, health, it's pets. The descendant, the seventh house cusp, that's our relationships, our partners. The eighth house, it's legacies, it's birth, it's death. It's other people's money. It's the derivative of this house here, so other people's possessions, resources, and values. The ninth, it's philosophy, religion, education, teacher, travel. Tenth, the MC, is the 10th house cusp. Social status, it's our profession, our career. It also represents the father or the authoritarian figure. 11th, it's friends, clubs, groups. 12th, it's seclusion, escapism. It's the unconscious, it's the hidden. Now, we have this astrological alphabet where Aries relates to the first house. Taurus relates to the second house, Gemini to the third, and so on. So we can actually talk about Aries qualities when we talk about the first house, or Gemini qualities when we talk about the third house, because it is their, whether we have the moon in Cancer or the moon in the fourth house, those energies will be very similar because it's the traditional house of these signs. The soul-centered houses. It's the same thing. It's just ramped up to that soul purpose. The first house, it's the head center, the soul purpose. It helps us identify our soul ray or describe our soul ray. Spiritual resources and spiritual values for the second house. The third house becomes concrete mind, education, steps along the path. The fourth house, soul foundations, the group soul, the ashram, the home of the group, the soul group. Five, it's the soul creativity, the will to serve. It's the causal body. The sixth house is one of service. The seventh house, co-servers, higher relationships. The eighth house, discipleship, transformation, liberation, and rebirth. The ninth house, wisdom, synthesis, religion, philosophy, the abstract mind. The 10th house, the hierarchy, the plan, the ashramic work. The 11th house, spiritual group, the new group of world servers. The 12th house, it's karma, it's bondage, and it's resurrection. So see how they take that and they ramp that up? So what we see here between the first and fourth houses, we have that exoteric outer environment for the expression of our personality. Then we have that higher expression if we have some kind of soul expression. So the first house changes from that focus on the physical body and appearance to that of using the body for the emerging soul expression. The second house changes from the focus on gaining substance to one of using resources for spiritual purposes. The third house changes from one of personal integration and communication with friends and family to working with the concrete mind. The fourth house changes from a focus on our home to thoughts of our karmic past and finding our ashramic home. With the fifth house, our hobbies and creative pleasures, they're raised to that focus of developing on spiritual will and creative outlets for the soul. That sixth house, it focus changes from work and health to developing spiritual service for others. The seventh changes from personal relationships to spiritual relationships, also to the relationship between the personality and the soul, between co-servers in the one work. The eighth house focus changes from endings and legacies to that liberation, rebirth, and that transformation. Ninth of higher learning, religion, and exploration becomes one of that abstract mind and spiritual enlightenment. The tenth shifts from our career and social standing to one of spiritual responsibility and ashramic goals. The 11th house focus changes from friendships to group service, and the 12th from fears and dreams to understanding the karmic bondage that is going to inhibit us, to dispelling illusion and to transmitting those fears so that we can actually be released from that bondage. So, do I have any questions on the houses and how they change their purpose? And again, this is the same as before, where both things can be happening. We have an outer life and we have a spiritual life, and they may be competing for each other, with both things happening at the same time in our life. So, any questions on this before I move on to another subject? Okay, next we're going to talk about interceptions. Okay. An interception occurs when a sign is contained completely within the borders of a specific house, like you see here. Aquarius is not on any house cusp, and neither is Leo, because they go together in pairs. But what we do see is Cancer and Capricorn are repeated on the thing, on two cusps, okay? So, when the sign on the house cusps gives us an expression of that particular house, and it's unique to us because it's all based on that mandala of where our, what's on our ascendant, and then that sets the rest of our houses, right? So when this sign is not on a house cusp, there is no expression of that sign within our environment. So it's going to inhibit it in some way within that personal environment. Okay. It's not only going to inhibit the expression of that sign, but it's also going to inhibit the expression of any of the planets that are found in that sign. So Jupiter and the South Node are going to be inhibited in some way because they are in an intercepted sign. The North Node in Leo will also be inhibited because that's not on any cusp. It's intercepted. Okay? And that is going to inhibit these planets' ability to rule the house cusp of another sign. The nodes don't rule any signs, but Jupiter does. Jupiter rules Sagittarius, and it isn't going to be very effective in that until the interception is unlocked somehow. It also rules Aquarius esoterically. So it's intercepted in the sign that it rules. Do I have that right? Oops.
Yes, you do. You do. Okay. It's fine.
Okay, good. I don't have my little cheat sheet handy, and you know how old minds sometimes lose their train of thought. Okay, anyway. So an interception is going to inhibit you somehow, both through the expression of that axis and through the signs and the planets that are in them. Okay, so what we have to do is figure out how to unlock it. And an expression of this that I got, and I actually got it from Eva, I thought it was a really, really good way of putting it, is it's as if that sign and those planets are in a closet and the closet is locked. So one key to opening the closet is the ruler of the intercepted sign. You have to figure out how to release that energy so that those planets can be used in their full expression. Okay, this takes time. It takes work. We work on it throughout a lot of our lifetime. At first, in our early environment, it doesn't encourage the development of energies that are actually intercepted here, okay? At least not to the degree that you actually need them. And this can be frustrating because it affects many areas of your life, especially like in Jupiter's case, the signs that it rules. Okay, Aries intercepted. It discourages self-expression, aggressiveness, initiation, and independence. You'll be more meek and mild, and you won't be willing to try new things like most Aries will normally do. Taurus, it doesn't provide enough love, affection, or warmth, maybe not enough material needs or self-worth. You're discouraged from being possessive and taken for granted, and you can actually be put down, feel like you're being put down. Gemini, inadequate learning faculties, interrupted education of some kind, illness, learning disabled, care of siblings, something like that. Cancer, too much or not enough emotional material security. Leo, suppressed creativity somehow, discouraged from having romantic partners or children, unsatisfactory romantic affairs. Virgo, critical environment, says you never can do anything right. Don't ask questions, just do. You're not allowed to analyze anything. Libra, it doesn't provide enough opportunity for relating to people. You're discouraged from socializing. You're not being aggressive and independent. You stay at home. Scorpio, could be repressed sexually, have strong emotions like rage or jealousy. The environment may not provide understanding or other people's values. You have a deep need to get involved with the occult or metaphysical studies. Could be some kind of blocked inheritance. Sagittarius, no provision for post-secondary education, discouraged from taking risks. Strict or different religious upbringing. Capricorn, insufficient respect, recognition, status. Lack of job opportunities, discouraged from going for goals. Aquarius, environment discourages individuality from having friends. It's too rigid. You can feel trapped and need like you need to break free. Pisces, it discourages having faith in yourself or getting in touch with your intuition or going for your dreams. Transiting planets, they help to unlock this closet. They create some kind of a temporary relationship with the intercepted planet that triggers events. They may not be pleasant events, but they can open the interception, they can release that planet's energy, and they can promote a more fuller expression of intercepted planets in signs. You also want to look at the ruling planets for the intercepted signs. Do they form any aspects with the planets that are intercepted? If so, that relationship can tell you a lot about what's going on. Are they friendly relationships? Are they easy aspects? Or are they challenging? Experience and personal growth, just normal evolution, that's going to help us. As we get older, we get wiser. At least we hope so. And that helps us to express these higher qualities. Also, trying to more fully express the soul qualities of those signs, the rulers of those signs, and the planets that are intercepted. These are all tools that we can use to help unlock these interceptions. And of course, as we saw before, whenever anything is intercepted, it means that one sign is repeated on two different cusps. So it reinforces that second sign in two different environments, actually. Okay? It gives double emphasis on the repeated axis, and it highlights that extra work might be needed in those particular signs in that axis. Okay? When this happens, the first cusp to be identified is usually the primary focus of that sign. And the second cusp, the one right after it, follows the lead of the first. Okay? So it can actually be considered dependent on the first for its fulfillment. If you have an ascendant and it's the second sign, then your soul purpose is going to be inhibited because it's following the lead of that 12th house cusp. You know, so this has a lot of different ramifications that you have to consider when you're looking at this. It isn't something that I can talk to you about in, you know, just a slide or two, but it is something that you have to keep in mind. And if you do, in fact, have interceptions in your charts, these are different things that you need to look at. Okay, let me end this right here. I know I went through an awful lot of material, and I'm going to open it up to questions right now. And of course, I told you, you will have the slides that go with this. But what I want to do is tell you that I want you to look at all the slides that we've got, and I want you to consider it because we're actually going to take a break next month. Both Eva and I are going to be at the conference there in Chandler, Arizona from 24 April to 6 May. We do, in fact, hope to see some of you there, and that those of you who can't make it can actually catch some of the live streaming. But while we're away, please look at these slides that we've given you over these last three or four webinars. And consider the various things that we've talked about because you're going to need it once we get back and once we actually start delineating the charts, okay? Remember when Eva discussed the difference between exoteric or traditional astrology and esoteric astrology, how exoteric deals with the characteristics and traits of the personality and the form. It concerns events, circumstances, and this conditioning environment. And it's about planetary control. Esoteric astrology, on the other hand, is about the unfolding of our consciousness, our reaction and our response to the sign via the esoteric planets. And it awakens us to the special gifts of the sign and the ray that help us gain soul control over the personality. So our next webinar is going to be on 2 June. Eva, do you have any comments that you would like to make before I open it up to the floor for any questions?
Sure. Thank you very much, BL. Well done. I just want to mention to all of you is that astrology is a third-ray science. And going over the rays, if you remember, the third ray is the ray of a lot, of multiplicity. And it has so much to offer, the science of astrology, that what we're trying to do is give it to you in small pieces so that we can start putting it all together. We're actually doing very much a Virgoan or a fifth ray thing, which is taking it apart in order to put it together. So like BL said, if you get a chance, do go over this material so that it's part of it is in your background already. You don't have to think about it as we start moving into the next part that we'll be offering. That's it.
I also, you know, both Eva and I, we have a lot of redundancy in the information given to you, but that's so that you can pick the various different formats of it that speak the most to you. And so when you look at the slides, you can whittle it down to just certain ones that provide you with that nutshell that you're looking for as you're going through it. And again, I hope that the information on the vehicles at the beginning of this presentation gave you some food for thought for your own vehicle, your own rheological profile. So, okay, any questions, comments?
Can I ask, do you have any handouts for this quantity of material?
The handouts that we have are the slides themselves. We will be publishing them with the recording, you know, as the handout. So everything, you know, like you'll have these tables. Oops, wrong computer.
Will it be at the end of the series, will it, or what? When you think of publishing?
When we get to the end of the series, I haven't done it so far this time, but last time what we did was each time we published a, it was publishing the slides, but we published them all together. So in the first webinar, it was just the first webinar slides. In the second webinar, it was the first and second webinar slides there at the second webinar. I haven't done that this time, but I will probably do that at the very last of the study part of this. So whenever you go to look at the recording, you can also download the slides, and then you have that study material.
Now, BL, is this, besides being sent to all our students, this will be available on Makara for future reference?
Yes. These webinars are only open to Moira Federation students and faculty. They are not open to people from the public. However, after the webinar, you know, they can't attend it live, but it is on Makara and it is open to anybody who wants to look at it after the fact.
And the reason that it isn't open is not because we don't want to share this material. It is because you, the students, will be working on your own chart, and you will be engaging BL and myself to work with you. So it'll be on our webinar. So there's a lot of work behind the scenes and a lot of work during the webinar that we do together. So if we had the public, everybody wants to have their chart read, everybody wants to have their chart worked on, we would get an enormous number of people that we don't know who would want to have all of this done for them and with them. So we narrow it down to just our students at the Moria Federation.
Okay, any other questions?
A point of interest, while you guys are thinking of what you want to ask. When I first started learning this, oh, I don't know how many years ago, 25 years ago or something more than that, I remember drawing circles and dividing the circle up into 12 and trying to learn the glyph for each sign, trying to learn the characteristics and filling them into these little narrow slots of each house, and then trying to do the, I must have done this over and over and over. I'm a slow learner, obviously, because it took me a long time to really get it. But if you get it, it'll stay with you, you know? So everybody will use their own way of learning, obviously. I know I had to write things out, but you will get it. And it's a wonderful, wonderful
piece of learning that will stay with you from one incarnation to the next.
Yeah, it's interesting information, number one, but it's this kind of information that we're talking about, like especially with the environment, that you keep in the back of your mind because it tells you so much rich detail as you begin looking at your chart. But if you don't know it, if you've never been exposed to it, then you might miss those subtleties. So here, hold on a second here. Go ahead, please, Bibi. I've unmuted you, but you're self-muted. There you go.
Okay. I wonder if you can give us some advice where to go and calculate the natal chart. You've done it for me, and you've done a great job. Last year or 2 years ago, but if I would like to do it for someone else or just to make some practice, do you have some advice?
Yeah, I do. Walter Polan has a website. What is that? It's Astro.
Well, I wonder if just looking up Walter Pullen, like you pull and then E-N, Pullen, online would automatically, you know, lead you there.
I think it's Astronova.
Okay, thank you.
No, it's not Astronova. Astrolog. Astrolog. Okay. This is free public software that you can download, and you plug in your information. And he is a graduate of the Moira Federation, and as his dissertation, when he graduated, he had this program for 20, 25 years. Maybe longer. And as his dissertation, he took it and added all the esoteric information to it, as well as the exoteric, which it was originally. So he has that information here. It's absolutely wonderful.
Oh, perfect. I found it. Thank
you. Okay. I put the link
in. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, Joe put that there in the chat. So,
the other thing is there are some not so expensive downloads for various programs that will allow you to work with them. The one we use is Solar Fire, and it's a little expensive. But it works very well. As you can see, we use it for a variety of different things. So there are different programs out there.
Yes, there are. There are quite a few astrology programs out there that professionals use and the non-professionals who are just playing with it and everything. But what I like about Walter's is he has the esoteric information in there now, which is very difficult to come through with any program, and it's free. You can download it for free. So it's really good for beginners who are just getting their way around. Okay, now we have a question from Victoria. Will we receive a chart from the Moira Federation? Normally you don't, but that's part of this particular process that we're doing with this set of webinars, that we will work with you. We will provide you with a chart. I will run it for you from my Solar Fire program and send you the information. And then we will help you, as Eva said, we'll work behind the scenes, and then we'll help you present your chart to the class. So the short answer is yes. Those students who are participating in this webinar series will receive a chart from Eva and I as part of this process. If you look at the earlier set of webinars that we did that then too. we've changed this set of webinars up and we're doing things a little bit differently, but that's one thing that we will continue to do. We will work with the students, give them their own charts, a little bit of interpretation, and then you'll have to work and provide more interpretation, and we'll work with you. We'll give you our own insight as to what we see, and we expect you to give us some of your insight as to what you see going on there with your chart.
The reason we do this is because the Moria Federation does really not offer an opportunity to work independently and together with a teacher facilitator with the chart. It's not something that is normally part of the courses. So this is a wonderful adjunct that we are offering to those that are interested.
Okay, any more questions or comments or anything? I don't see anything. Well, thank you guys for being here today. We hope to see you through the remainder of our series. And if you missed anything, it will be available on Makara. I will be posting the announcement in all the usual places.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody. Good day, good morning, good evening, as the case may be.
Good day. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. And you guys are welcome. So, bye.
Bye.